Now, we feel, the organization feels that this is an important area to be discussed in your interest. It's an area that I've hesitated discussing because I felt we did not want to criticize in any way anyone who was doing anything for the cancer patient, because most of the systems will benefit a patient, we feel, more than taking radiation and chemotherapy, although we feel many of those systems are not optimum in nature. In order to help you to understand where we're at, so you can make a comparison with what is offered to you and you make the judgment on your own, I'm going to explain our organization to you first, but before that, I'm going to explain cancer to you. And very few people understand cancer, except the oncologists. Even some MDs have a difficult time and enter into the kind of therapy that they would not accept if they understood it. Now, our position is this, that the tumor is not the problem. And yet the medical community has, for 90 years, been funding research that dealt only with dealing with the tumor. And yet, because of the system they've been using, they have been unable to produce a cure for cancer. Research is still continuing by the American Cancer Society and other laboratories, National Cancer Institute, because they do not have the cure for cancer. They do buy time for cancer patients. In some instances, a considerable amount of time. In other instances, a lot less time. And the 50% cure rate, which they claim, only refers to 5-year survival. And it's not 50, it's a little under 50. It's about 48% that they claim will survive for 5 years. But then, and let me add something to those statistics. I heard someone in the audience talk briefly here about the fact that someone had died and the death certificate read something, pneumonia. I believe it was Betty who said pneumonia. My daughter died of leukemia, and it said respiratory failure. We have documentation in our office of copies of medical reports, death certificates, which read everything but cancer when a cancer patient has died. Now that certainly creates good statistics because it leaves the distinct impression that cancer patients are still alive who are not. That those people who, although they were recorded as having gotten cancer, it's not recorded that they had died of cancer. So if you see the picture that we see about cancer, now our position is this, that it's not the tumor that is causing all the trouble. If you can arrest the condition, anyone can keep a tumor and survive for their full life expectancy. And that tumor will not be destructive. It's only destructive when it grows and grows and grows and reaches a point where it obstructs normal body function. But what causes it to grow? Is it an entity completely separate from the body itself? You can no longer take that position. It was a position that was taken a long time ago. It has to be changed. Ever since they have discovered that there is a connection between the immune system and tumor development, then you can no longer feel as though that's a separate entity that is going to grow without any control by the body itself. The body has the responsibility of producing healthy cells instead of unhealthy cells. The immune system has the responsibility that when we do produce abnormal cells, and all of us and anyone can produce abnormal cells, these are your cancer cells, a healthy system will slough it off. Some researchers actually did papers on it. They said that 100 to 1,000 cancer cells can be produced in a day, but a healthy system will slough it off. Now that's a very different concept of cancer that most people have been led to believe is cancer. We have a cancer patient who's had a tumor in the colon for 18 years, but she's a survivor because the tumor is arrested, remains stable. By this time, for all we know, it may actually be necrosed. The cancer cells might be dead. They might still be encapsulated, but she's not willing to go to a doctor to find out whether it is still malignant or not, to have a biopsy done. She's not interested. All she's interested in is maintaining her life. So, knowing the position of our organization, that we feel it's not the tumor you have to direct your energy against, but you have to deal with the host. And someone came up and asked me if I would explain what host resistance was. Well, the person who has a tumor is the host of the tumor. And host resistance is when you repair the malfunction of the body itself so that it ceases to produce abnormal cells, so that all organs function properly, or at least up to an optimum level to maintain good health. We don't have to feel that we have to have a body of a 16-year-old when we're 60 or 70 years old, but it must be able to maintain the health of that particular age. In other words, not be broken down with some chronic degenerative disease. None of them. Not cancer, not arthritis, not any kind. Even benign tumors, the body should not develop if it's in a state of health. So what we do is suggest that you put all of your energy in to repairing the physical condition of the host and rebuilding host resistance. If you heard Betty Fowler talk previously, you'll know that that's exactly what that program did for her. It rebuilt her ability to handle the problem. We have one magazine out there that has a picture of Betty when she had the tumor. It looked very much like a melanoma. Melanoma is also called skin cancer, which is a lot more serious than basal cell carcinoma. That changed. The melanoma itself, or this cancer that she had on her chin, changed. It was finally removed by another doctor, and he was willing to sign a paper for her saying that that was not a malignancy anymore, yet it had been biopsied. It had been examined by previous doctors, and there was no doubt with them that that was a malignant condition. But here she healed herself. Now, we're also going to have a patient talking to you tomorrow at the end of the program. He had cancer of the spine, much more serious than Betty's problem. He was flat on his back, came out of the hospital on a stretcher, and very gradually rebuilt his own resistance so that he recovered, and this was recovery is now 18 years. Cancer of the spine, unable to walk. Very slowly, very gradually, he rebuilt the host in this instance. And this is what we want to emphasize, that you put your effort into rebuilding the host. Now, since this is the position of our organization, and we've spent a lot of time to gain the experience that we have, in all of that 18 years, I have visited nearly 95% of the clinics. We've been in touch with every therapy that's been called an alternative therapy. Doesn't mean if it's an alternative, it is automatically biologically sound and can help the patient repair. They may improve the physical condition of the patient, but they don't necessarily make the full repair. And some of these so-called alternatives also zero in on the tumor, which again is a system that has not produced cure. It's the medical system, it has not produced a cure, and therefore it is not going to be any better if it's called an alternative cancer therapy, unless it also makes a bio repair to the host. must make that repair. Now, I've been asked periodically to talk about the different therapies that people hear about because we've been leaving an impression that those therapies which we've put on the shelf and we don't suggest that patients use have been resurrected in various places, and an impression is being left that we didn't know about them at all. Not only do we know about them, but we have dealt with patients who have been on the therapies over long periods of time to conclude that they were not producing satisfactory results based on what we feel is the most optimum system. Now, we don't mean to be critical of those systems, and anybody can choose any one of them, but from our point of view, knowing what is producing the best results, when you call our organization, whether it's a Philadelphia group or the New York group, we feel an obligation, a responsibility to give you the resource that we feel can give you the greatest amount of help. We could offer you all of these situations. We can do what some of the other organizations do that are helping cancer patients. They send out a whole sheet. 90 names possibly listed on the sheet. Years ago when we first started, we did the same thing. We sent out a sheet listing all of the people that were claiming to use alternative therapies. We found, unfortunately, that the patient floundered with that sheet. We found that that patient had absolutely no way of making an in-depth judgment of knowing exactly what was going on at that center or with that doctor in a short period of time, and they had to make a decision somewhat quickly. We don't want to panic anyone to say that they have to make their decision overnight as the medical community might, but you have to make a decision within a short period of time. You can't extend this over the years we've been dealing with all these therapies. You're not going to spend 5 and 10 years before you come to a conclusion about one or the other of the therapies. And yet we have spent not only 5 or 10 years, we've spent 18 years. And any new program that comes along, usually the information will come through our office. And we will keep that individual at arm's length until we've had adequate time to examine it, or at least to make a judgment that is based on sound information or fits in with what we know has the capability of helping. Now, those are our yardsticks, that we don't emphasize treating the tumor unless the tumor is interfering with a normal body function. Then to save the patient's life, you must first attend to the tumor. First requisite is to save the life, so you attend to the tumor. But we try to offer them resources that will reduce the size of the tumor, but cause no abuse to the patient, so that we can maintain the physical well-being of the patient, maintain the integrity of the body, so we've got something to build on, something to restore. And you can't do that very well if the patient has been overloaded with poisons of chemotherapy. Some people do get well. I don't want to say they don't. Look, there are percentages in every instance. Or overloaded with radiation. And again, some people do get well, but we have a responsibility to offer the optimum opportunity. And I'm going to repeat that. So I want to explain why we don't support all of the so-called alternative therapies. I've quickly created a list of what I could remember without going through the list, because I never expected to talk at this time. So we'll talk about what I can remember. If someone here comes up with someone else, we'll talk about that too. Now, we'll start with Dr. Ravisi. Dr. Ravisi uses a system to create acid-alkaline balance. This we can understand, this we can approve of, creating acid-alkaline balance, but it's always aimed at watching the tumor size. There is nothing in that program that will start host resistance or a restoration of the host. Now, we feel it is failing in that area and may help the patient, but chances are it's not going to do as adequate a job as a host repair system will do to maintain health for a long, long period of time to avoid a recurrence. This is why, and now if anyone tries to include in what Ravisi does a biological repair program or include the nutritional system under the guidance of someone who is very competent to do that work, Ravisi will tell them that he does not want it added because he is still watching acid and alkaline balance only. Now, a good program will also take into account acid and alkaline balance. It's an important thing. If a patient is overly acid, and I heard Fleming Rasmussen say something about on the acid side, you are much more likely to have tumor reduction. Again, he was talking about tumor reduction, but if you're too acid, you're in a state of what they call acidosis. That's not a state of health. If you're too alkaline, if you're at the other extreme, you're in a state of alkalosis. That too is not a state of good health. There's a middle ground where the body has a better chance of healing itself. So this is the reason why we don't make referrals to Ravisi. Even if a patient calls us who's with Dr. Ravisi, we will tell them that there's no point in trying to include a dietary program unless they want to go back to Dr. Ravisi and talk with him about it and see what he says. But you're wasting your time if you go there and try to use a dietary program. And you don't want to waste your time with something that's not going to be workable. Now, another therapy which is available, labeled an alternative, is the work of Dr. Virginia Livingston. Now, her work primarily tries to use the immune system to see what reaction she can get to help the cancer patient reduce the size of a tumor or to regain their health. Now, the technique that she uses, she had used BCG, and I want to say at this point, there's a reason BCG can accelerate cancer growth. And I'm going to digress a minute to tell you why BCG can accelerate cancer growth. You must understand this, and you'll know why we don't support it. If the immune system has some vitality, and BCG is injected into the tumor, whatever vitality the immune system has, it will make an attempt to fight the BCG. And it may reduce the size of the tumor. But if the immune vitality is terribly depressed, and you inject the body with the BCG, which is Bacillus calmette-guerin, a bacillus, which most people consider the body would like to throw off, it then becomes cumulative and accelerates the cancer growth. So we prefer systems of immunotherapy which actually duplicate what the immune system itself would produce naturally. And there are many of them around. Instead of one that triggers a devitalized immune system and can, in its own way, ultimately depress it possibly further because it's exhausting it. So we prefer immunotherapy, and I repeat this, that will enhance the immune activity by using substances which are closer to what the body under normal conditions would produce. Now, I heard Dr. Sanchez answer a patient today about interferon. I hope you'll understand the point I'm making here. She asked if there were side effects. And he said yes, and we have to control it. If you enhance the immune activity, even with a better diet, you're going to get a reaction. So why not, if you use a natural substance that the body would automatically produce, you're also going to get a reaction. But I don't call that dangerous, and I don't call them side effects. They are the body's attempt to begin the healing process. Very often you get a spontaneous fever. Now, what's the difference if you get a spontaneous fever and the immune system causes that spontaneous fever, or you go to Dr. Sanchez and you have the fever created artificially? Fever is a healing process. The naturopathic physicians knew that years and years ago. Today, the federal government has issued a statement officially that fever is a healing process, and we have it in print in the office. We were delighted when we got the material. Not only are they saying that fever is a healing process, but I would very timidly say from this platform, when I spoke about fever being a healing process, and somebody said, well, how high? I would very timidly say, well, you can let it go to 102. And they said 104 was self-healing. Do you see? And they're right. A lot of people write quotes of Hippocrates, and I want to paraphrase the quote. I don't want to say it's in quotes. But that he said if he could generate a fever, he could cure some diseases. That's what the fever is. And let me tell you how it does it. First of all, you're tired. And so you go to bed. You're at bed rest. When you're at bed rest is when the body does its healing, not when you're exhausting your energy and shifting it in other places. This is the principle behind fasting. You shift the energy into feeling, into healing, not into digestion. I saw someone from the American International Hospital come in and listen to this. Now, when Dr. Sanchez said that it was the side effects, we consider those side effects a healing process. But what is going on in the medical community is because they've been conditioned to feel that fever is so dangerous that there's a tendency to start to use antibiotics. So look what you're doing. You're creating the fever and suppressing the fever. You've got the patient on a seesaw. He's going to become awfully tired, awfully exhausted from a system of that kind. And what we're suggesting to patients when we refer them to immunotherapy is if you get a fever, tell your doctor you want him to deal with it by letting it run its course as long as it is not dangerous. We would not think of suggesting to an individual they do anything to endanger them, but to let it run its course as naturally as possible so that it will accomplish what it is trying to do, and to only cut it off if it becomes necessary. Now you see, they're raising body temperature to 108 degrees. I'm not suggesting anyone allow a fever to run even up to 105 and a half or six. There's a vast difference between the spontaneous fever and artificially inducing a fever. And the big difference we feel is this: they are constantly putting fluid back into the system. You don't dehydrate, but a spontaneous fever running very high can cause dehydration. That will cause disorientation. Do you know when they say it might affect the mind? The dehydration will cause the disorientation. It can be dangerous. But under supervision with artificially induced fever, you got liquids flowing into the body at all times, and the waste products are also allowed to be eliminated artificially. A catheter is usually put into the bladder, so the water goes in one place and the waste material is eliminated through the catheter into the bladder. These are not do-it-yourself systems, by the way. If you know what you're doing, it's quite complex, and it's always wise to have someone guiding you through the process. So I wanted to explain immunotherapy to you, and you can use the yardstick that I've suggested about Dr. Virginia Livingston, and I'm not saying she hasn't helped patients. We still want to offer patients what we consider the optimum pathway, and it's based on the physiology of what you're doing. That's another word I spoke to you earlier, and I said, please try to understand the term physiology, that you know what you're doing, and that you know what the physiological reaction is going to be. You can apply what I've said about that immunotherapy to all the immunotherapies and make your choices. I don't have to go through Burton and whoever else is offering any kind of immunotherapy. Now, I don't like to, I'll keep repeating this, I don't like to be in this discussion, but we found and felt that it became a necessity for our organization to discuss these things. Dr. Hans Nieper. Again, we've known of Nieper's work from the very inception of this organization, and yet at one time earlier, we used to feel comfortable making a referral to Dr. Nieper. He has changed his program. He was one of the laetrile doctors, so was Dr. Contreras, and did a fairly decent job. We feel they are not accomplishing the same thing anymore, and there is a tendency today to go into non-biological material. And if we're going to protect the patient, we cannot encourage them to go to a practitioner who will be using radiation, chemotherapy, hormones to imbalance the hormonal system, Amulsin, which comes from the Hafer-Yonker Clinic in Bonn, Germany, which we have known to produce great difficulty in patients and be damaging to the liver function. And he's using all of these things. The only thing Dr. Contreras claims, and along with Dr. Nieper, is they're using things differently. But to us, they are not biologically sound. And if a system is not biologically sound, it will do damage to the physiology of the patient. And if you do that, how can you affect a repair? When patients are in pain, the first thing we suggest, or some of the doctors will suggest, is an herbal preparation upon which aspirin was patterned, but at least you're using a botanical. I'm not going to say that every botanical is safe. Some botanicals can be very poisonous, but this one is not, and it's willow bark. Now, what you're getting when you use aspirin is a synthetic version of willow bark. Why not go back to the willow bark, which is less damaging, less harmful? And you don't want to use drugs to suppress pain too readily, because it also suppresses the nerve system. It has to, in order to suppress pain. If you suppress the nerve system, then you're not going to get the natural signals that have to go out to the organs for them to do the full capacity of their work. I hope I'm not going too far, and I hope I'm being understood. I feel as though it's an area that is not commonplace, and so you don't pick up the information so readily, and if we don't provide it, we feel it's not going to be out there where it belongs. Now, I spoke briefly about the Bonn Clinic, and they use this product called Amulsin. The experience that we had with cancer patients who were on Amulsin, and we didn't suggest it to them, but the very doctor who developed the Amulsin had a practice in New York City, and we spent time interviewing him and having discussions with them. Whenever we've heard about something, we wanted to know about it in depth. And he, of course, would refer cancer patients to this Bonn Clinic in Germany for Amulsin treatment. What we found was that this was very damaging to the liver, which was ultimately proven in research. And when the doctor who is in charge of the establishment where they produce the Amulsin heard about my opposition to it because of the damaging effect of the Amulsin, he came in to talk with me. And I told him exactly what we had found and that this was our position, that we could only use biologically safe material if we're going to get that body back to health. And he said, but we don't use it on everyone. Do you use it on liver cancer patients? He says, never. And yet I've known the clinic to take liver cancer patients. And he said, it's not even used on every patient. It's decided whether the body can take the Amulsin. And a lot of people think they're talking vitamin A. It's not. This is a totally synthetic material. It is not vitamin A. It's not called vitamin A. It's called Amulsin or Emulsin or A-Emulsin. And he said, they only use it in 10% of the cases. And yet they were promoting it well enough so that a lot of other practitioners were using it in many instances when they should not, and in more than 10% of the cases. And when Dr. Contreras was using it, I deliberately collected the data from patients who had come back from there, who had had Amulsin from there, and those who had not had Amulsin, and I gave him a report of the physical condition of those patients, and nearly all of them who had the Amulsin were even dead by that time or died later, and I gave him the comparison. What he did, our organization has done more in the background than anyone can possibly understand. What he did was they immediately stopped using it and then went back to it, cutting the dose in half. It isn't going to change its image or its material because it's cut in half. And when he told me about it, and I want you to know I have a great deal of respect for Dr. Contreras. He is a very honorable man. Very much so. He'll be forthright with you. Anyone going there will come back and tell you that, and I know him quite well. I just don't agree with the therapy. This is all we're talking about. What will happen if you cut the material in half, it'll take twice as long to become cumulative and cause the same amount of damage. It doesn't disappear. It doesn't stop doing what it has been doing. So that's one. Now that applies to most of the people who have been using Laetrile. We feel as though it is not quite living up to what it did earlier. We had experience with cancer patients when we first organized who took as little as 1 gram of Laetrile intravenously and got better. Over the years, what they have done is refine it. And they've been proud of that refinement, that it's about 95% refined. But what happens to sugar when it's refined? Doesn't it lose its vitality? Or take whole grains and refine them and you get white flour. Doesn't it change it somewhat? We were persistent in the early days when new people came along and began to manufacture Laetrile that we would not refer a patient except to a resource that was providing only 65% refined material. But the pride in the 95% material took over, and people were impressed with that. And I don't know that you can get 65% refined material today at all. So we stopped making our referrals to Laetrile, even though today they've gone as high as 9 and 12 grams a day. I don't think they're getting the results that were achieved with the 1 gram, and it was under 1 gram. Dr. Contreras was so skittish at the time when he got the material from Dr. Krebs where it was developed and knew it had cyanide in it. They were very gingerly using it and going up in the amount, so very carefully, for fear that the cyanide would cause trouble. That's organic cyanide. It is balanced in the natural material. The cyanide is not what causes the trouble at all. It has no, okay. I'm going to try to get through some of these faster. If any of you are interested, I'm going to be at the Vegetarian Hotel the next weekend for 3 days. I have a better opportunity to present so much of what the organization knows to pass it on to you, because this is your resource. We've examined everything. You cannot take the time to examine all of those things. If you want to go ahead and do what you feel it seems important to you, do that. But it is wise to take advantage of the organization, whether it's in Philadelphia, elsewhere, or in New York City. But I'll have 3 days. Each day I have 2 hours. I can't even allow myself that privilege at a convention that I set up myself. Now, here I had a 1 hour opportunity, I thought, and I've taken over somebody else's time, and it's less time than I expected. I've talked about the Bond Clinic, American Biologics, which depends a great deal upon the Laetrile 2, but we feel they have not quite developed a system which is taking the patient biologically right through the whole process. They are using primarily nutrition as they see it. Cellular therapy as they see it and the way they handle it. Vitamin C in huge doses, which we have taken exception to because it's not a biologically sound system to pump all of that one vitamin into the body and expect it to be able to handle it, that it can metabolize it without it depleting the body in some other way. It has to have a negative effect on the body. And when they say it enhances immunity, I'd sooner see you take good quality immune substances to enhance immunity than to put the body through the strain of trying to use 30 grams of vitamin C a day that cannot be all natural material. You can make an all-natural vitamin C with using about 5 milligrams. After that, you have to use synthetic material. But I feel the 5 milligrams, and we feel this is information has come to us from other sources, competent sources, the 5 milligrams, because it's natural to the human system, has more potency and providing help to the system than high doses of vitamin C, which really are the dose is designed to treat tumor. And we want the design to treat the patient, to repair the patient. See how many times we have to repeat that? So this is one of the complications with American Biologics. We would probably make referrals to all of these people as something to do in preference to the radiation and chemotherapy. But since we know systems that produce better results, we're making those referrals first. If the patient objects, if the patient feels that it's not feasible for one reason or another, we'll let that patient make the compromise and offer them the compromise opportunity. But we won't offer it to start with. We also have Dr. Issels. Now here you have one of the biological systems. Unfortunately, he used to have a clinic in Germany which made it possible for us to send a patient out of the country, and they had a place to stay with someone who had a biological program. He no longer has his clinic. The patient is there on an outpatient basis. We do make referrals to Dr. Issels when we get calls from London, from Switzerland, from Europe, from Israel, from India, do you see? From places where he might be closer to them. But if we get calls from people in the United States or around the United States, Canada, and places of that kind, we prefer to give them a resource on an outpatient basis that's closer to them. I think it makes sense. Why send them to Germany when we can provide a resource that is closer? I don't say they're in the resources in their backyard. Unfortunately, it isn't. We wish it were. We tried to take the opportunity at one time to bring some of these practitioners who were getting the better results into New York City to teach courses to the doctors we knew in the city and around the city. And we had one response, that one doctor was willing to upgrade his work to make it more optimum in nature. They're too busy. Their offices are loaded with people. There's no motivation to give up the kind of time we're asking them to give up to develop what we feel is a program that is going to function better. You've heard me say before, if you've heard me talk, that we feel you don't hang out a shingle, a nutritional shingle, just because you have a degree in medicine or a degree in chiropractic or because you've been doing nutritional work. You don't automatically assign yourself the responsibility of taking care of a cancer problem. You have to pay your dues. The practitioner has to pay his dues. He has to learn his craft. He has to learn the design for the cancer patient. There are people who are doing it and they paid their dues, spent years traveling, talking to doctors, spent years in programs like Dr. Leo Roy, who will be talking tomorrow, spent 6 months with Dr. Max Gerson. That's what we mean paying your dues. He's not the only one, but that's the kind of thing that needs to be done for you, people to be on solid footing, to be able to make a complete biological repair for the cancer patient. And we're not talking about treating the tumor. The medical community treats the tumor. We talk about improving host resistance or treating the patient. We can put it either way, enhancing immune activity. Any biological function needs to be improved. I'm cut short here. I have a little time for questions and answers. I'm going to run into the time there, all right? The hour isn't up.
I have all the time in the world.
All right. All right, if you'll please come and take the microphone, glad to answer your questions.
I wanted to ask you if you knew whether or not the laetril present in the pits of apricots
We prefer to suggest to patients who are looking for laetril, it's our position to do this, is to suggest to them that they use the apricot kernels or use the kernels from other seeds. If they want to take a larger supply of the apricot kernels, they can put them in a blender, try to get capsules if they can, fill the capsule and take a larger amount that way. Usually one capsule of a certain size, and I can't remember the size, will hold nearly 4 apricot kernels. And you avoid the taste if you want to. And you'd be surprised. But you've got all the natural potent material there.
And what are the other seeds besides peaches, I know?
Oh, they're peach pits, prune pits. There are a load of other kinds of seeds, even apple seeds contain. But you want to get those seeds where you're getting more of it instead of the tiny seeds. Yeah.
First of all, I'd like to say, as a representative of American International Hospital, I don't think that our philosophies differ that much from FACT, or else we wouldn't be here. I think that FACT is doing a wonderful job. Our role is dealing with patients that have stage 4, stage 5 disease process, and you must understand that. Sometimes our belief is really parallels what Ruth Sackman is saying here today. When you talk about the philosophy of metabolic approach towards illness, is to improve your health habits and thus help the body's own natural defense mechanisms combat the illness, and we believe that. We have staged diets at American International Hospital. We believe in preventive medicine. However, what you must understand, the question I'd like to pose to Ruth today, and it's a very difficult question to answer, when the disease process outpaces the body's own natural immune system defense mechanisms, sometimes, and I say sometimes, and I use the word sometimes in this manner, sometimes you have to employ traditional modalities to bide time to let the body's own immune system go to work and use your own natural killer cells to combat the disease process.
Yeah.
That's what we do there.
Yeah,
we don't use it as first-line, mainline medicine.
No question about it. What you must do is first save the patient's life. Then you can build on something. And you do whatever is necessary in order to accomplish that. There are times when the fever therapy will not reduce the tumor enough to allow the natural processes to take place. What you do is first see that everything is clear and that the patient's body can function. I said that, but maybe I didn't make it clear enough. But we would like to see the radiation and the chemotherapy as a last resort, not automatic, which is what the medical community is doing today. Since they gave up radical breast cancer surgery, they're finding small tumors. And sometimes they examine the lymph nodes, and if they find a suspicious cancer cell in the lymph nodes, the next step is to start that patient on prophylactic chemotherapy. Prophylactic means prevention. Well, if it is a preventative to use chemotherapy, my question is, why not give it to all the women? If it can prevent cancer of the breast, why not give it to all the women? Because it can be deadly. It can cause cancer.
I think what Ruth is trying to say, and part of our philosophy is, I don't think there's a surgeon alive that can say, when you're dealing with a woman who has breast disease or breast cancer, I don't think there's a surgeon that can operate on that patient, do a radical mastectomy and say, I got it all. Breast cancer is a systemic disease.
There's no question about it, but that doesn't mean that the chemotherapy will improve the physical condition of the patient. We're saying is when you remove the tumor load or you debulk the tumor, fine, no problem with the surgery. But to add on destructive therapies without knowing that that patient requires those destructive therapies, or even knowing that they don't require those destructive therapies. You see, that's the new protocol. That's the new protocol. If Dr. Sanchez or your doctors offer that protocol, I can understand that. I've always understood when the doctors adhere to the protocol. Otherwise, they're going to be in trouble and they're not going to help anyone else. We feel it's up to the patient if they don't want the protocol to negate it, to take the responsibility to negate it. Do you see?
I understand exactly what you're saying, Ruth. And at our hospital, that is employed. Patients at our hospital, it's called informed consent and freedom of choice.
Yeah.
If you don't want it, you don't have to take it.
We'll refer the patients to the American International Hospital because they know us, they know our position, and they will respect the patient's right to turn down a therapy that they don't want. If they feel the patient is making a bad decision, they will discuss it with the patient, and it will be a participatory decision. Do you see?
Yes. Are you familiar with the works of Dr. Burton and Dr. Kelly? And if so, can you give us a little bit about them?
I spoke about Dr. Burton briefly. I couldn't go into it in detail. I feel Dr. Burton has a reasonable kind of immunotherapy. Dr. Lawrence Burton. We've had Dr. Lawrence Burton on our platform. We actually gave him some research funds many years ago. But at that time, he was agreeable to combining that with the bio-repair system, which means the full nutrition, detoxification, skeletal balancing, whatever the patient needed. He was in the New York area at the time. Now he's in the Bahamas. And although I have stated over and over again that he does not want the patient to change their diet, he tells the patients he has no objection when he hears I've said it, and yet we know we can't escape the feedback coming from there that he does tell them not to change their diet, and we understand it in from his point of view. Now, he's helped a number of patients. I think he could help many, many more if he would include the dietary program. But he's doing research. It is a research center. He makes no bones about the fact that it's a research center. If he wants to offer his research into the conventional arena, that has to stand on its own 2 feet. And he can't be in a position where someone will say, well, maybe the diet helped that patient. Have I made it clear?
Yes.
All right, now the Kelly program. Kelly has developed a system over the years, and he developed it from his own sad experience with cancer and looked for help for himself, and he ran into a doctor in Fort Worth, Texas. This was a biochemist who cured himself of cancer, and Kelly knew it, and he went to that particular person, a Dr. Howard Beard, by the way, and he learned a great deal, and he learned to help himself from that experience. He ultimately developed a program with the help, a great deal of help from Standard Process Laboratories, because they knew the physiology, the physiological function of the body, and helped him to understand it. So he did develop a program that was very helpful for many patients. We made many referrals to Kelly because of the results we saw. A young doctor by the name of Nicholas Gonzalez has written a book taking into account 50 of Kelly's case histories. He got them from all over, from us and other places. Very dramatic case histories. He would not insert one of those case histories into the book until he had verified it by getting the medical report from the original institution. He had the patient sign the papers so that these were available, got them. This young doctor used to work at Sloan Kettering. He knew what the routine was that would make those case histories acceptable. That book is ready to go to a publisher. They have not found a publisher for it, and there's resistance on the part of the publishers to publish the book. It can be published privately. Anybody can do it privately, but the preference is to get an established publisher so that the distribution will be good. Now, that's with Kelly. Kelly is not available at the present time.
Are there any kind of statistics regarding their success rate?
Statistics cannot actually be gotten in cancer cases. Everybody wants numbers. And we refuse to deal with those numbers. The American Cancer Society National Cancer Institute uses a hospital up in Connecticut, and they measure the success or failure there as the microcosm of the macrocosm, in other words, of the whole. And as I said earlier, they very often leave out the patients who are claimed to die of heart failure, kidney failure, pneumonia, malnutrition. You name a lot of these patients, they're not included. We're not playing the numbers game, by the way. Not at all. If we see a situation that produces results in people that we know from experience would have an impossible time recovering, then we're satisfied. When you take a patient who's been to Sloan Kettering and has had chemotherapy, and the blood-producing mechanism is no longer producing blood well enough so that the patient is on a 2-week system of getting transfusions that are taking him from 7 to 9, not even into the normal range, and that patient, through the program, recovers the ability of his bone marrow to function for him, then you have to have some respect for it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sorry I give you such long, drawn-out answers. I wish I could shorten them.
Are you familiar with Dr. Privatera?
Yes, Dr. Privatera used to use Laetril in his practice. I don't think we, that's the, I think we can encompass his work in the Laetril work primarily.
He's doing monoclonal antibodies now.
The monoclonal antibodies, by the way, he's saying he's doing monoclonal antibodies. We're not quite happy with the monoclonal antibodies. Of all of the immunotherapies, we're not happy with it. Most of it is being used this way. And there's a place where they're doing this biological research down in the Carolinas. And they're not claiming a great deal of success. And how they use it primarily is to use it like a homing pigeon, you know? You take some of the cancer cells from the tumor itself, process it. If you add a little chemotherapy to it, cells have an affinity for their own kind. This is why cell therapy works. If you give an individual liver cells, it goes to heal the liver. You know, new, fresh liver cells, it goes to the liver. And the same thing applies when you try to get the monoclonal antibodies to carry to go back to the tumor site with the chemotherapy. It doesn't always find its way.
What about
we think it doesn't find its way because the chemotherapy confuses it.
What about oxygen therapy?
Well, it's an adjunctive therapy. It can be helpful, but it mustn't be considered a primary therapy. I should have said this in the very beginning. Our position is there's no pill, there's no injectable, there's no tonic. By itself, that is a whole program. Until you make the bio repair, there are many patients who have a tumor removed in the breast, do nothing. And what happens 2 years later, 3 years later? Another tumor, because the body is still doing the second time what it did the first time. So we do stress that bio repair.
Thank you.